Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I'll read this morning from chapter 21, page 306. And while you're getting there, since tomorrow is Ram Nomi, and we're reading about Lord Balaram this morning, so I just wanted to share with you one incident. The two devotees were arguing whether when we say Hari Rama, it means Lord Ramachandra or Lord Balaram. So which one is it? That's it. The reservoir of all pleasure. So Srila Prabhupada, the argument came to Srila Prabhupada, and he said, my disciples should busy themselves with distributing Krishna consciousness rather than arguing over whether Lord Balaram or Lord Ramachandra. You remember that letter? And even Parasaram, yeah. So for poetic reasons, sometimes Lord Balaram is referred to as Ram or Rama in this, but it's the same person. Also for tomorrow, I like to make an executive decision and to say we'll be fasting until 2 p.m. I encourage everyone to fast till 2. We'll break fast here at 2. Those who want to fast till moonrise, which is around 6 or so, or just have a plate set aside. That was always my understanding. Sometimes it says moonrise, so just to settle it here, we'll fast till 2 if you can manage. If you can't take lunch or Krishna lunch, it's all right. These are not the essence of devotional service, okay? That's just a way to remember Lord Ram. Okay. So chapter 21, Balaram, A Visit to Vrindavan. In Dwarka one day, Lord Balaram grew keen to see the many friends he'd known so well throughout his infancy. He called a royal chariot and mounted it alone to journey to Vrindavan, his beloved childhood home. The residents of Dwarka were thoroughly aware the residents of Braj loved Krishna far beyond compare. They thought, if Krishna stays and Balaram sees them instead, both we and they may live, if they are not already dead. Indeed, the pain of separation plagued the cowherd folk, and when Lord Balaram arrived, his joyful parents spoke. O Master of Creation, as your foster dad and mother, may we be kept from harm by you and by your younger brother? Lord Balaram gave deep respects to all the senior men and took respects presented by his junior friends and kin. With handshakes, folded palms, embraces, nods, sweet words, and smiles, Lord Balaram met everyone in tasteful, fitting style. Lord Balaram refreshed himself, returned, and, sitting down, accepted many questions from the cowherds gathered round. Their voices shaking out of love, they asked about the health of Krishna and the Yadus and of Balaram himself. By fortune, Kamsa died along with other enemies, and Krishna built our relatives a fortress in the sea. Dear Balaram, are all the Yadus doing well again? Do some of you discuss and think about us now and then? The gopis asked Lord Balaram with suitable respect, is Krishna happy with the city girls, as we suspect? Does he recall his father and his mother? Will he come? Does he recall us gopis and the service we have done? For Krishna, we abandon every person we held dear. And how does he reciprocate? He simply disappears. How do those learned city women give him so much trust? No doubt his words enchant them, and his smiles arouse their lust. Why don't we change the subject? Please do not bring up his name. If he can live without us, let us simply do the same. Remembering his laughter, his embraces, and his eyes, the gopis thought of Krishna and gave in to mournful cries. An expert in conciliation, Balaram replied, I have some confidential news for you that Krishna has supplied. As Balaram repeated all his brother's secret words, the gopis felt relief and comfort, pleased with what they'd heard. As weeks went by, the people of Vrindavan felt restored. Lord Balaram went out at night, as Krishna had before. He danced with certain gopis who, at that time, were too young to come for Krishna's rasa dance and join the moonlit fun. Caressed by fragrant breezes, with his girlfriends left and right, Lord Balaram enjoyed the Jamuna those pleasant nights. The god Varuna sent a drink that flowed from honeyed trees, a heavenly intoxicating brew called Varuni. That aromatic beverage perfumed the nighttime sky, attracting Balaram and his companions to imbibe. Gandharva sang, and Balaram appeared to be the great Airavata, the elephant surrounded by his mates. The gods played kettle drums and showered flowers in their glee. The sages praised Lord Balaram's divine heroic deeds. As Balaram and many girlfriends took their forest stroll, the Varuni appeared to make his eyes begin to roll. Intoxicated with delight, adorned with forest lays, Lord Balaram felt beads of sweat like snowflakes on his face. He called the Jamuna to come and cool his entourage, but Jamuna, who thought him drunk, refused to even budge. Enraged, Lord Balaram brought forth his famous, fearsome plow and said, "If you don't come, I'll redirect you here right now. You disregard my order and move only at your whim. My plow shall make 100 streams of you. Shall I begin?" The frightened river goddess, who appeared and bowed her head, was simply an expansion of the one that Krishna wed. With trembling voice, the Jamuna said, "Ram, please hear me first. I didn't understand that you sustain the universe. Release me from your mighty plow, O greatest of the great. Not knowing your position, I did not cooperate. I come before you humbled. Now accept me, if you please, as one of your surrendered and committed devotees." Releasing Jamuna, with all his gopi friends in tow, the elephant-like Balaram stepped in her crystal flow. He splashed his girlfriends, they splashed back, and when their play was through, the goddess Lakshmi gave him gems and silks of ocean blue. Adorned with silks and jewelry and fragrant sandal paste, resplendent Balaram observed the channels he had placed in Jamuna when he refused to let her keep away. A visitor can see those channels to this very day. For 60 evenings, Balaram enjoyed Vrindavan's mood, as well as the exquisite charm the gopis all exude. Their constant fun together filled his mind with great delight. To Balaram, those 60 evenings passed as if one night. Pondraka. While Balaram enjoyed his trip, a certain foolish king named Pondraka declared himself the lord of everything. The flattery of childish men had swelled his empty head. He thus dispatched to Dwaraka a messenger who said, "O Krishna, Pondraka, my king, has sent me here. It seems that you have failed to understand that he is the supreme. He is, in fact, Lord Vasudev, the one and only God, and he has come to show his grace. You must stop your facade. He orders you to bow to him. You must also desist from using his four symbols, conch shell, lotus, club, and disc. Do not ignore his warning, for he told me to convey he'll crush you if you don't stop imitating him today." King Ugrasen and other members of the Yadu court could not refrain from laughing at this ludicrous report. But Krishna sat, enjoying all the laughter. By and by, he called the waiting envoy and dictated this reply. "Yes, I'll release these symbols, as you impudently said, especially my disc, which shall remove your foolish head. Then you can grace the vultures, hawks, and dogs that gather round to worship and adore you as they eat you on the ground." To Pondraka, the messenger relayed these taunting words. As Pondraka considered them, the unforeseen occurred. His friend, the king of Kashi, and Pondraka, then his guest, were shocked to see Lord Krishna and his army battle-dressed. The mighty warrior Pondraka attacked with two divisions. The king of Kashi brought three more to hold the rear position. King Pondraka wore Krishna's crown, insignia, and dress. He flew Lord Krishna's flag and showed his mark upon his chest. Lord Krishna laughed and laughed to see this duplicate appear, who looked just like an actor dressed in someone else's gear. When Pondraka's militia hurled weapons and attack, Lord Krishna neutralized them all and drove the soldiers back. Dismembered soldiers, camels, steeds, and elephants all fell. It looked as if Lord Shiva danced and bid the earth farewell. Across the blood-soaked battlefield, his enemy disgraced, Lord Krishna turned to Pondraka and told him, face to face, "Dear Pondraka, did your announcement not include a list of symbols I am to relinquish, starting with this disc? I now renounce my disc, O fool, by sharing it with you. Now you renounce my name, which you so stupidly assumed." As mountain peaks go soaring off from Indra's thunderbolts, the head of Pondraka flew off, concluding his revolt. The king of Kashi, who had vowed to cut Lord Krishna's head, confronted Krishna next and had his own removed instead. By imitating Krishna, this Pondraka grew absorbed in contemplating all the lovely features of the Lord. Pondraka thus was purified and gained his liberation, while Krishna traveled homeward to a blissful celebration. Lord Krishna's arrows, having plucked the head of Kashi's king, had flown it back to Kashi as if it had sprouted wings. The citizens of Kashi gathered round it in a throng and asked, "What is this object, and to whom does it belong?" They saw it had some earrings and assumed it was a head. They thought it must be Krishna, whom their king had wanted dead. On recognizing what it really was, they knelt and cried, "Oh, who will give us shelter now? Our mighty king has died." Sudakshina. The king of Kashi's eldest son, Sudakshina by name, performed his father's funeral and, in his mind, proclaimed, "I must track down his killer and avenge my dear deceased." Sudakshina then worshipped Shiva, aided by his priests. The powerful Lord Shiva, in a pleased, commanding voice, presented Sudakshina with the blessing of his choice. The prince requested Shiva to endow him with the means to kill his father's killer so his name could be redeemed. Lord Shiva said, "There is a sacred ritual designed to vanquish all the foes of the brahminically inclined. The sacrificial fire will itself destroy such men." Sudakshina, on hearing this, was eager to begin. The sacrificial fire, as the priests performed the rite, rose up and took a human form, a most horrific sight. The fearsome naked creature had a beard of molten ore, a flaming trident, furrowed brow, and fangs designed to gore. On legs as long as royal palms, the monster ran away. Accompanied by ghosts, he scorched the country all the way to Dwarka, his destination. There the people saw a hellish beast approaching as they watched with fear and awe. Distraught, the people cried to Krishna, "Save us from this fire! This flaming beast will turn our lovely city to a pyre." Lord Krishna, who was playing dice, as monarchs sometimes do, just laughed at their alarm and said, "I'll surely rescue you." Almighty Krishna understood the giant, fiery beast had come from Shiva's sacrificial rite. He thus released Sudarshana, his fiery disc, which blazed like countless suns. Its heat at once drove back the beast and put it on the run. The fiery beast, defeated by Lord Krishna, had no choice. When curses are reversed, they fall on him who used his voice to speak them in the first place. Thus empowered to destroy, the demon turned on them who had put him in their employ. Sudakshina was shocked at the arrival of the beast, who quickly burned his boss to death, along with all his priests. Thus men who challenged God in a demoniac crusade end up annihilated by the weapons they have made. The disc burned the entire town of Kashi down as well, converting all its buildings to infernos out of hell. Sudarshana departed from that smoldering disaster, returning to the side of his eternal, graceful master. A person who recounts this gallant pastime of the Lord, or hears it with attention, will attain a great reward, release from many lifetimes of accumulated sin, and freedom from the punishment of taking birth again. Tvidvida. "Dear Shukadev," said Vishnurata, "is there more to hear of Balaram's achievements in Vrindavan's atmosphere? I crave that wondrous taste with which his pastimes are imbued. As God, his actions have no limit. What else did he do?" A servant of Lord Ramachandra, Vidvida by name, fell in with Bhomasura and was thoroughly defamed. This hairy ape, upset by Bhoma's death, ransacked the land, destroying homes and villages completely out of hand. He tore up mountains, using them to slaughter peaceful towns. He churned the sea so mightily that coastal people drowned. He spoiled sacred rites when he passed urine, gas, and stool, and shut up helpless people in dark caves. He was that cruel. One day Dvidvida, primed for rape and other violent ills, heard sweet, attractive singing in the Rivataka hills. He came upon Lord Balaram, absorbed in luscious play, with lovely gopis drinking Varuni from pots of clay. Lord Balaram wore lotuses on every handsome limb, with drinks and songs and rolling eyes and gopis circling him. The mischievous Dvidvida scrambled up a nearby tree and sounded out, "Kila, Kila," in vulgar mockery. The gopis started giggling at the impudent display, for as young girls they tended to behave in silly ways. Without regard for Balaram, the ape displayed his teeth. He then turned round, bent over, and displayed his underneath. Disgusted, Balaram picked up a rock and let it fly. The crafty ape avoided it, and in a rude reply picked up a pot of Varuni and smashed it to the ground. He pulled the gopi's clothing and produced offensive sounds. Lord Balaram despised these acts. He also understood dispatching of this wicked ape would do the planet good. But as the lord picked up his club, Dvidvida broke a tree and brought it down on Balaram with great dexterity. Lord Balaram stood motionless despite the heavy blow and struck Dvidvida's skull so hard that blood began to flow. Dvidvida snapped another tree and stripped it with his arms, but Balaram just splintered it, avoiding any harm. This scene went on again and yet again till all around the forest had grown treeless, so they fought on naked ground. The angry ape released a rain of rocks on Balaram, who smashed each one to pebbles with his club, remaining calm. The furious Dvidvida chose to foolishly persist by beating Balaram directly with his primate fists. Disposing of his club, Lord Balaram employed his hand to strike a single crushing blow the ape could not withstand. Dvidvida crumpled to a heap and bid his life farewell. An earthquake wobbled Rivataka Mountain as he fell. Lord Balaram returned to home as people sang with love. The earth rejoiced, as did the sages, saints, and gods above. Lakshmana and Sambha. When Lakshmana, the daughter of Duryodhana, became of age to marry, many famous kings and princes came to take part in her Svayamvara ritual, for she would choose her husband then, and she was lovely as could be. Now Sambha, son of Krishna, always carried in his mind the urge to marry Lakshmana, but she was not inclined. So Sambha chose to kidnap her, a custom of the day. Before she could select her man, he carried her away. The kinsmen of Duryodhana, the Kuru clan, exclaimed, "This rogue has stolen Lakshmana. He must be put to shame. Arrest him. What will Krishna and his Yadu family do? They rule their kingdom just because we still allow them to. When we detain their precious Sambha, all the Yadu men will understand our power and be humbled once again. As yogis curb their senses by the power of the soul, to catch this prince will bring the Yadus under our control." The elder Kurus, led by Bhishma, authorized this plan. Though Lakshmana, now touched, could not wed any other man, the Kurus chose to show their rage and exercise their will by holding Sambha captive, though they didn't want him killed. Duryodhana and many other warriors rushed the prince. The valiant Sambha bravely strung his bow. He didn't wince. Despite the unjust nature of Duryodhana's attack, with lion-like ferocity, young Sambha battled back. Heroic Sambha struck the mighty Karna and six friends. Disabling their chariots, he put them on defense. The Yadu prince was strong, the Kuru men had to admit. They praised his faultless archery as they were being hit. A horde of Kurus next forced Sambha's chariot to slow. One warrior struck his driver and another broke his bow. The Kurus captured Sambha and, with effort, tied him down. With Lakshmana, they went back home, their quarry tightly bound. When Narada reported this, the Kurus were abhorred. King Ugrasen commanded, "We must arm ourselves for war." Lord Balaram, however, cooled their anger as he said, "Instead of fighting, let us try diplomacy instead. Accompanied by Yadu priests and elders, Balaram appeared to be a moon among the stars, serene and calm. When they made camp near Hastinapur, Balaram resolved that Uddhava should first attempt to get the problem solved. So Uddhava went in the Kuru court and paid respects to Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Duryodhana, and all the rest. When they learned Balaram was waiting in a nearby place, the Kurus, bearing gifts, went out to greet him face to face. The Kurus worshipped Balaram with gifts of cows and scents, and those who knew his strength bowed down, avoiding an offense. They asked about each other's health and relatives, and then Lord Balaram forthrightly got to business. He began, "King Ugrasen, our ruler, sent instructions here with me. These words are for your benefit. Now listen carefully. A gang of you attacked our solitary, blameless prince. Since we're related, I have tolerated your offense." The Kurus heard these potent words and all that they implied. Infuriated, they conferred and angrily replied, "Amazing as it is, it seems a shoe has left the ground and tried to set itself on top, above the royal crown. Because these Yadus married in our royal dynasty, we granted them their throne, their wealth, and other property. We shared our royal symbols, such as conchals, throne, and fans. Like serpents fed with milk, they dare to issue us commands? Would even Indra dare usurp a fig from Kuru hands? Why, that would be a lion's kill, surrendered to a lamb." These self-important Kurus, their position clearly shown, then turned their backs on Balaram and strutted to their homes. Lord Balaram's expression grew as hot as scorching flame. He laughed a laugh that terrified, then forcefully proclaimed, "These puffed-up, passion-laden rogues have no desire for peace. They'll only come to reason if they're punished like a beast." Lord Krishna and the Yadus held their rage, though it was hard, but these dull-headed rascals show me utter disregard. King Ugrasen commands the gods. Lord Krishna carried home celestial Parijata trees. He's fit for any throne. Why, Lakshmi worships Krishna's feet. Do they imagine he does not deserve accoutrements reserved for royalty? The gods pursue the dust from Krishna's feet to grace their crowns. Brahma and Shiva, Lakshmi, me, and others of renown are simply parts of Krishna's all-inclusive state of being. How dare these fools say he's unfit to be a mortal king? The Kurus brag that they have granted us the land we use. They think they are the social head and we the social shoes. Their opulence intoxicates their foolish, swollen heads. What genuine authority would stomach what they've said? Why should these wretched Kurus burden earth another day? With plow in hand, he stood as if to set the world ablaze. As Balaram's expansive plow began to strike the ground, the tremors rocked the city and caused panic all around. The town itself was broken from the earth without delay. Lord Balaram then pierced the ground and dragged the town away. The Kurus saw the Ganges, which was flowing to the south, about to swallow their entire city in her mouth. In terror, they brought Lakshmana and Sumba to the Lord and bowed to him to consummate their hasty new accord. "O Balaram," they cried, "the whole creation rests on you. In ignorance we made offense. Please tell us what to do. We understand that you create, maintain, and end us all. You move the stars and planets as if you were playing ball. As one of countless pastimes, you keep earth upon your head. Wind up the whole creation and take rest upon your bed. Resentment doesn't spark your anger. Rather, you engage in showing anger just to purify us rascals with your rage. As our creator, helper, and the soul of all we do, O wielder of all potencies, we bow our heads to you." Propitiated by the trembling Kurus, Balaram withdrew his fearsome anger and grew generous and calm. Relieved, the Kuru prince, Duryodhana, at once arranged a dowry for his daughter, Lakshmana. The gift contained 1,200 full-grown elephants, each aged some 60 years, 6,000 golden chariots with skilled charioteers, 120,000 horses, each with full effects, and maidservants, 1,000, graced with jewels on their necks. Lord Balaram accepted this. The Kurus pacified. His party went to Dwaraka with Sumba and his bride. His loved ones heard every word their hero had to say, and Hastinapur's southern side is higher to this day.
Namo Vishupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Vatale Srimate Jaya Pataka Swami Namne Nama Acharya Padaya Nitaika Papadaya Ne Kaura Kata Damdaya Nagara Gram Tarine Kam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lam Gayate Girim Jat Kripa Tamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam Paramananda Madhavam Sri Chaitanya Ishwaram. First, I want to thank Kalakanta Prabhu for giving me a chance to speak on Lord Balaram today. Thank you. I will first discuss the story of Lord Balaram's visits to Vrindavan, and if there is time, I will discuss the story of the killing of Dvivida, the gorilla. Before we discuss Lord Balaram's visit to Vrindavan, I wanted to talk about Lord Balaram's position, in what category Lord Balaram is in the Vishnu Tattvas. Is he an incarnation? Is he an expansion? Is he a Satyavesha avatar? And, well, my research was done through a few books. One was the Srimad Bhagavatam. Two was the Sri Balabhadra Sahasranam. Now, this is not very common, because usually we hear about the Vishnu Sahasranam, the thousand names of Lord Vishnu. And we hear about Radharani's also, thousand names. But Lord Balaram's Sahasranam is only spoken twice. The first time it was spoken, originally it was spoken by Gargamuni. He spoke this Sahasranam to the gopis at the banks of the river Yamuna. And then for the second time, this was spoken by sage Pradvipaka, who spoke or who recited this to Duryodhan in Hastinapur as a request. He wanted to know about Lord Balaram. As you know, Duryodhan is the disciple of Lord Balaram. He learned the art of the club fighting. So he wanted to know about Lord Balaram, who he is. And the third place that I researched was the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila, where it tells you about who Lord Nityananda is, Lord Balaram. Alright, so here we start. Lord Balaram is known as the Chaturvyuha. So we have Krishna, and then we have Lord Balaram. Now, Lord Balaram expands himself in four different forms. You have Sankarsana, Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. Now I'm going to talk about only Sankarsana. Now, after Lord Balaram expands into these other forms, he expands as Sankarsana. From Sankarsana comes Mahasankarsana. Now, this Mahasankarsana is in charge of all the Vaikuntha planets. He resides in every Vaikuntha planet, and he's the maintainer of all the Vaikunthas. Now, from Mahasankarsana comes Mahavishnu. Now, from Lord Mahavishnu, he is the one who glances over the material nature and impregnates the living entities. From Mahavishnu comes Garbhodakashari Vishnu, who enters in each and every universe. And from Garbhodakashari Vishnu comes Shirodakashari Vishnu, or Paramatma, that enters into each and every atom along with the living entities. So that's the first thing, understanding who Lord Balaram is, what his status is in the tattvas. Now, in the Vishnu, Balaram Sahasranam, it's very interesting because when I read, this is the first time I read also the Balaram Sahasranam, everything that describes, it's almost like going back and forth Krishna. It describes Lord Balaram as playing the flute. It describes Lord Balaram as Paramatma, Antaratma, Rudra, Nishimha, Kalki, Ramachandra. And it says Chandra Bamsi, which means that he plays the flute. But you always hear, you know, Krishna playing the flute. So how is it that Lord Balaram plays the flute, right? So it was reading all these verses and all these explanations about Lord Balaram. It was like going in and out. You're hearing about Lord Balaram, but all of a sudden you're thinking, wait a minute, he's describing Krishna. You know, for me it was like trying to understand why they're describing Krishna's features, but it is Lord Balaram. And for instance, I'm just going to read you a few pages here from this book, page 36 and text 24. Krishna Vishnur Mahavishnur Rava Vishnur Visheshavit Hamso Yogeshwara Kurmo Varaho Narado Munir. He is Krishna, Mahavishnu, all-powerful, all-knowing, like a swan, the master of yoga, Kurma, Varaha, Narada, and a great sage. So you see, he is described as Krishna. Very interesting. Text 39. He says, he yearns to enjoy pastimes with hundreds of gopis. He is the killer of Shankashuddha, the lifter of Govardhan Hill. So we know that Krishna is the one who lifted Govardhan Hill, right? So why is he described as, Lord Balaram was described as Krishna? It's really very interesting. The warrior who defeated Indra, and the protector of Braya. He says he is the subduer of Kaliya. So as you can see, it's going in and out. He's describing Krishna, or Balaram as Krishna. Now it's interesting because I remember as a child, one of the first time I heard about Krishna and Balaram, I heard from a devotee that they asked Prabhupada, and you can correct me if I'm right, what's the difference between Krishna and Balaram? And Prabhupada said that the only difference is the color. Krishna is white, and Balaram, Krishna is dark blue, and Balaram is white. And that's the reason why you are able to see that how when they're describing Lord Balaram, they're describing Krishna, and vice versa. Another verse, this is text 43, 62. Here another text 62. He is Krishna, Narada, Ganga, Bahirati River. He is the sacred river. He is Siddha Sarma, Prabhava, Bindu, and Bindu Saroba. Another feature of Lord Balaram is that he expands himself as to serve Krishna as the paraphernalia. So when we do deity worship, Lord Balaram expands. The immediate expansion is the conch, the plate, the arti. All those items are an expansion of Lord Balaram. Also in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Balaram also appears as the drum. It's very interesting how Krishna, and when he appears, he brings all his associates. Lord Balaram also expands into those associates. Another feature that I wanted to talk about is Lord Balaram appearing as Lord Nityananda. And what I saw is that in Krishna's pastimes, Lord Balaram is the elder brother of Krishna. And he is there to protect Krishna. He doesn't take any nonsense from demons. He just, like in the story of Duvida, he's just sick and tired of this monkey or this gorilla, you know, making too many disturbances, and he just goes there and kills him. Now, very interesting, when you see Lord Balaram appearing as Nityananda Mahaprabhu, he's very compassionate. He's more compassionate, more merciful than Lord Chaitanya himself. So you see the difference. It's like, wow, on one hand you see Lord Balaram displaying this form, and when he appears as Lord Nityananda, he's totally the opposite. He's just like, wow. So that was the first thing I wanted to talk about Lord Balaram. Now, Lord Balaram, my best memories are how I was introduced to Lord Balaram. I always saw Lord Balaram as my hero. I know each and every one of us have a personal attraction to a form of Krishna, right? Some like to worship Lord Ramachandra. Some like to worship Lord Vishnu. To me, I was always attracted to Lord Balaram. My dad, when I was young, my dad used to read me the Krishna book. And I would listen to these stories of, oh, well, Krishna killing Kaliya, Krishna killing Putana, Krishna killing Trinavarta. But when I heard Lord Balaram coming into the pastimes, it was like, wow, wait a minute, who is that person? And I remember hearing about Lord Balaram killing of the demon, and it was like, wow, this is the brother of Krishna? He has a brother? You know, to me, I was a little kid. I'm listening to these pastimes of Krishna, and I was attracted to Krishna's pastime, but to listen, to hear that Krishna has a brother, and his name is Balaram, and he is more powerful than Krishna. He's his elder brother. I was like, wow. Now, my first time I saw Krishna Balaram was in Vrindavan, 1993. At that time, I was in the Gurukul, learning about Vedic mantras, and just like Krishna went to the Gurukul, I had the opportunity to attain a Gurukul in Mayapur. And I was very fortunate to see, to go to Vrindavan in 93. Now, I remember walking into the temple, and I remember seeing Srila Prabhupada, remember seeing Shri Gornitai, and in the middle I saw Radha and Krishna, Radha Shyama Sundar. And, you know, I was very, very much pleased to see them. But when I walked into Lord Krishna and Balaram, you know, just seeing Lord Balaram standing like this, the first thing that came to my mind was like, wow, he is so cool. He is the coolest person just sitting there. I mean, you know, I'm a kid and I'm just trying to understand who is this person. And I was just, this is my hero. So I very much identify with Lord Balaram as, you know, as the elder brother of Krishna, who is there to protect Krishna, to give pleasure to Krishna. And one of the things that came to my mind was in the story of Kaliya, when Kaliya holds Krishna and all the residents of Vrindavan are crying, Ananda Maharaj is trying to run into the Yamuna, and, you know, the Brajavasis are fainting because of the fumes, and everyone is like crying, and they're all in sorrow, you know, Krishna is going to die, Krishna is going to die. And you see Lord Balaram is just standing on the banks of the Yamuna watching, and he's like, ah, my brother can handle himself. He knows what's going on. He knows that he is Krishna. And it's amazing that, you know, he plays his part of his elder brother, and when the time comes, he jumps into the situation where he needs to, you know, like the different killings of different demons. And it was like, wow, you know, Krishna is there, but Balaram, he's in a totally different level. I don't know, to me it was like the job needed to be done, and he goes there and get it over with. Another thing in the stories of Krishna and Balaram, just like Ali Krishna Prabhu gave the class, and she explained how it's almost like a fairy tale that we can always find something in common, something that, you know, like in the Swayambhara, you know, it's the dream come true for any woman to get married among all these qualified kshatriyas. You know, it's like, wow, it's almost like a fairy tale. Same way, you know, when you hear about Lord Krishna's pastimes and Lord Balaram, and you hear how wonderful it would be to be in the presence of Lord Krishna and Balaram while they're performing these pastimes. It's amazing to me. One thing I remember while chanting the mantras of the Purusha Shukta, Lord Balaram is described as Rudra Nishinka, and he's also described as Ananta, unlimited. He's described as the Sesha, Ananta Sesha, the unlimited hooded snake, serpent. And it reminded me when I was learning the Vedic hymns, the Purusha Shuktam, one of the first verses of the Purusha Shukta, it describes, I'll just sing it. Sahana bhavatu sahano punaktu sahavirjam karavavahai tedashvina vadittamastuma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Om sahasrasir shapurushaha sahasraksak sahasrapad sabumim vishvato britva atyatishtadasam gulam purusha evedagam sarvam. Yat bhutam yascha bhavyam utam vritatvasya shanaha yaram nena tirohati. Basically, at the beginning, when the demigods saw that Mother Earth was bombarded by all these demons, and they all came together to pray to Lord Vishnu to appear, they all gathered at the milk ocean. They all, headed by Lord Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Agni, they're all praying there, please, Krishna, appear, appear in this earth. We are so fortunate that in this age of Kali, we have the holy name. Krishna has appeared in the form of the holy name. Just by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We can actually ask Krishna to appear in our hearts. Please manifest yourself in our hearts. Just like the demigods pray and they chanted the Purusha Shukta to ask Krishna to appear in this world, the same way we can ask Krishna to manifest himself in our hearts. Alright, now that we have discussed who Lord Balaram is, now we can go into his pastimes. Alright, so why did Lord Balaram was sent to Vrindavan, and why did Krishna not go to Vrindavan, right? Well, one of the answers to this is given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in that the love of the Vrajavasis is so intense that if Krishna would have gone back to Vrindavan, he would have never returned. He would have never left that place again. So because of the love of Krishna, understood that, you know, I'm only bought by the love of my devotees, right? So if Krishna would have gone back, he would have never gone back to Dwarka or any other place, because there is no love higher than the love of the Vrajavasis. Now, that is also explained here in the Vishnu Balaram Sahasranam in text 130, and it says, He is not independent. He is dependent on his devotees. His heart is wrapped in thinking of his devotees. He loves his devotees, and they love him. He is charitable to his devotees. He is his devotees' kinsman. He is the moon sun cloud of nectar. So exactly what Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, that if Krishna would have come back, Krishna wouldn't have returned. So instead, he sends Balaram to go to Vrindavan. Now, the first thing that when Balaram arrives, he pays respect. And it's very, very interesting because we as devotee, we always have to keep in mind where we stand in connection to elder devotees, senior devotees, younger devotees, and devotees who are in the same status as us. So Lord Balaram pays respect to Nanda Maharaj, Yasoda, and he gives blessings to those who are younger than him, junior, and he embraces those who were friendly with him. Then he goes to talk to the gopis, right? The gopis were so anxious to see Lord Balaram. Obviously, they were waiting for Krishna, but since Krishna didn't appear, they were like, okay, so what did Krishna say? What message do you have from Krishna to us? And one thing I like is the contrast that the gopis describe. It's basically, the gopis said, did Krishna forget us? You know, the gopis started to basically sweet talk. Is Krishna, because we are village girls, okay, Krishna may have forgotten us because, you know, maybe perhaps we are not that intelligent, we are not that smart, but we have given up everything for him. Our house, our families, we have given 100% to Krishna, and Krishna has cheated us, right? He just left, and he doesn't care for us. And then another copy said, well, but what about the city girls, right? What about them? They are smart. They're not going to, you know, Krishna's not going to cheat them. So, you know, you can see that they are thinking that, why is Krishna over there and why he's not over here with us? I've been cheated. So if Krishna is cheating us, have cheated us, he's also going to cheat them. So that was the mood of the gopis. So finally they just, all right, let's move on, right? In those days that Lord Balaram stayed, he stayed there for 2 months in Vrindavan, or 60 evenings. And it's very interesting because Lord Balaram also displayed the same pastimes as Lord Krishna. You always hear about Krishna Ras dance, but here you understand that Lord Balaram also has the Ras dance. And he gave an opportunity for the younger girls that were too young to dance with Krishna in the Ras dance. Now they were old enough to dance with him. So they were able to satisfy that desire by dancing with Lord Balaram, who is Krishna himself. Lord Balaram plays the flute, just like Krishna. And it says that after dancing, Lord Balaram wanted to have a bath, and he went into the Yamuna. Well, he asked for the Yamuna to come. Obviously, by that time, he had drunk some of the Varuna Ras, and he was a little bit drunk. And we know the story of where Yamuna refuses to go to Lord Balaram, and Lord Balaram picks his plow and says, well, if you don't come, I'm going to bring you to me. And Yamuna appears and asks for forgiveness. Now it says that when Lord Balaram comes out of the Yamuna and he's all wet, Lakshmi Devi appears herself and dresses Lord Balaram with clean, fresh garments. It's very interesting because you would think that there's another gopi coming to dress Lord Balaram, or Lord Balaram just grabs his clothes. But no, Lakshmi Devi herself appears to dress Lord Balaram. there's very, very significant that, you know, why would Lakshmi Devi appear to dress Lord Balaram if it's not Krishna himself? One of my favorite pastimes is the killing of the gorilla, the Vida. And why I like it so much is because, I don't know, as a kid I always liked also animals. And monkeys or gorillas are very powerful creatures. I mean, you know, just from today's day point of view, I mean, you go to a zoo and these are humongous animals, really strong. So when I heard about the story of Lord Balaram fighting this gorilla, I was just amazed. This gorilla, it's described as he was as 10,000 elephants, as strong as a 10,000 elephant. How can you possibly imagine that? I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me. Now, and the whole description of the fight is first, Dvivida picks up a tree and hits Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram takes his club and smashes it. And this goes on and on until all the trees in the forest are done. Right? Can you picture that? Can you imagine that? I mean, it's almost like watching a movie in your head. And once all the trees are done, well, now the gorilla goes and takes mountains and throws it at Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram again breaks it with his club until all the mountains are done. And then, well, Lord Balaram has fighting etiquette. He wouldn't fight with his club because the other person, well, the gorilla, didn't have a club or a weapon. So Lord Balaram drops his weapon and starts fighting fist to fist. And finally, Lord Balaram is like, okay, I'm done with you. And just punch him and kills him right on the spot. Right after this killing of Dvivida, he goes back to Dwarka. So, Lord Balaram is Krishna himself. It's my hero. And I'll end right here. Thank you very much.